You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com, and today's date is the 20th of November, 2025, and it's a Thursday, which means that we have Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson with us today, the producer of the Orthodox Nationalist, the Orthodox Medievalist, and a number of books. I believe he has a new book coming out soon, but he's here today to discuss what used to be called Burma and is today called Myanmar. Matt, welcome to the show. Thank you very much for coming on, and it's very good to speak to you again after our Sunday roundtable.
I can't believe we're doing this again. It invigorates me. But I am joined by Marcel, the feline, right next to me on the desk. I don't know if he has anything to add here, but he's a very sick boy. He has a tumor in his mouth. But he's eating okay. He's fine, but he's right next to me. So, he's not MI6 like Stanley was, but they are brothers. So, but you know, Burma is, you know, this is where I discovered Johnson's Law, with when I first started. 20 years I've been at this. For some weird reason, Burma fascinated me. I think in part because the military government in the 60s was explicitly National Socialist. They said so, you know, in their Asian context, of course. And it's been this back and forth. This is an incredibly wealthy country that's been kept from being wealthy by all of these wars. So now it's back in the news. Trump's talking about it. So I figured, okay, let's go back on something that, just because, you know, no one knows anything about it, doesn't mean it isn't of immense importance. Hence the topic.
Well, I can remember us talking a little bit about Burma before, and I remember Aung San Suu Kyi, and she was the darling of the UN for a while, wasn't she? And then suddenly she went out of favour, and she started supporting the generals, I think, and then she was toppled in a military coup, and I think that's about as far as I got with following it. But what we've got today is to do with the rare earth minerals, and as you say, it's to do with America's interests in Myanmar. And the title of the article that we're going to be quoting from here is "Myanmar is shaping up to be the next front of the Sino-US new Cold War. China wants to retain access to Kachin State's rare earths. The US wants to poach them, and their escalating competition over this part of Burma could make it the next target of the bloody Davos regime." Reuters reported that the United States Burma policy might shift towards more diplomatic engagement with either the ruling junta or the Kachin Independence Army, the KIA, in an attempt to obtain access to the enormous rare earth mineral reserves in the second's eponymous state. At present, the US is suspected of clandestinely supporting some of the armed anti-junta groups, but the KIA isn't thought to have benefited due to their isolated position along Burma's mountainous border with China and India. This geography poses a challenge to the redirection of these resources from China to India, for example, regardless of Kachin State's final political status, whether autonomous within a confederated Burma or independent. But that is assuming that China doesn't intervene. Reuters cited an expert on Kachin State who said that if they want to transport the rare earths from these mines, which are all on the Chinese border, to India, there is only one road, and the Chinese would certainly step in and stop it. So is what they're saying there is if America tries to get in there and export these minerals, then the Chinese will be able to get in there and stop it? Or would it, I should imagine that America wouldn't be able to get them out at all if the mines are all the way along the Chinese border, and possibly at the border with India, they might be able to do something, because obviously China has issues with India, and India may prefer to have America as an ally. I mean, that's all I can really comment on this, Matt. Obviously, you know a lot more than me about it. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned when Aung San Suu Kyi was, she can't be president because she's not a Burmese citizen. And of course, she's mostly out of the country, educated at Oxford and places like that. But she realized that when she was a counselor, that governing the country was very, very hard, and that these violent groups had to be smashed with military force. I think they even tried to pull her peace prize. They may have, actually. Now, initially, it was oil. Remember the Rohingya crisis? They tried to invent an ethnic group called the Rohingya, which do not exist. So it was oil there. Then it was, well, even before then, it was drugs. A lot of these ethnic groups are fronts for drug running. Soros was very interested in that. And now it's the rare earth. The U.S. has been involved here for decades and decades. It absolutely despises, the U.S. despises the military governments that have come and gone. But when they are in power, the country does very well, partially due to Chinese investment, which is always very good. I mean, these independents are, I don't know what they're going to do differently. You know, when the military is in power and things are like semi-stable, their investment in these areas is tremendous. Tremendous development that now these wars are destroying. And that goes, you know, throughout the entire country. And actually, they go out of their way to make sure to invest heavily in one. I mean, you know, this country was inherited, of course, from British colonialism, and is really a patchwork of various ethnic groups that no one's ever heard of. Although, the Burmese, the Burman, people make up about, I don't know, 69%, 70% of the speakers' population. These minorities are still substantial. And the U.S., the American purpose here, whatever their interest is, oil, drugs, this, has been to arm them. And the media, knowing absolutely nothing, can invent whatever they want. Hence, that's where Johnson's Law initially came from. My very first article at the Barnes Review, more than 25 years ago, something like that, on the topic. Now, we all know the rare earth minerals. It gets talked about a lot. If you remember, Donald Trump wanted to talk about them in Ukraine. Of course, they don't exist there. They're used for everything. Scandium, cerium, praseodymium, promethium, europium, terbium. I mean, you know, there's many of them. And this is also a huge part of the Chinese Belt and Road project that the U.S. despises. The One Road, and there's many more planned, is part of this development. But even if the U.S. has this capacity, is able to steal it, poach it, it can't. It has to use China for its processing. China is the dominant power in this regard. So either they're going to have to fight, the U.S. either going to have to fight, or they're going to have to make nice. Now, they're claiming that the KIA has won. I don't believe that. Keep in mind that there was very good reason why the coup occurred in 2021. That has not been carried in the American media at all. There was many voting irregularities. But that's the initial, you know, nominal cause of this recent spate of warfare, which has been fairly intense starting in 2021. And that's the context here. But Chinese investment has been huge in the country, and the U.S. despises that idea.
So is America backing the junta and China is backing the KIE? Is that correct?
No, it's the other way around.
Other way around.
Yeah, the military government is pro-Chinese. Actually, the Russians are heavily involved in its in its buildup. And it is, you know, it's like the Ukraine thing. The media is talking about how they're losing all over the place. I don't think that's true. The Burmese army is large and very battle hardened. They've been doing this a long time. And these ragtag militias, even though they're kind of being, you know, unified by the U.S., the U.S. has been there for so long. The CIA has been there for so long that, you know, but the media have, you know, just kind of inventing whatever they want. I don't believe they're losing. I don't believe the KIA has won here. But the point he's trying to make is that if they were to win, who do you work with? I guess it would be the Independence Army. And what would China do? China would be very upset by this. Intervention into Burma. Burma is conceivable. They've done it before, not in Burma, but it's it is unlikely. And then what the U.S. would do, you know, this is just another anti-Chinese front here. But Burma is just potentially so wealthy, it boggles the mind. And they've not been permitted to exploit all of this because of these endless wars that, to a great extent, the United States has fomented.
And obviously, I think things are heating up as Trump is talking about it now. With reports late last year about the joint security firm that China and Burma were planning to use at the time were analysed here and concluded that the risks associated with even a PMC-led intervention in support of the China-Burma Economic Corridor, CIMEC, makes this scenario unlikely. For as important as CIMEC is for helping China reduce its logistical dependence on the easily blockaded Strait of Malacca, Kachin's rare earth minerals are even more important, so its calculations could change. Nevertheless, China is known for advancing its national interests through hybrid economic diplomatic means, not military force. It is therefore much more probable that it might soon ramp up these efforts with either the junta, the KIA, or both to preempt any forthcoming US diplomatic campaign. The first scenario would aim to restore the military's control over Kachin's rare earth reserves. The second would work towards Kachin's de facto independence, while the third would seek that state's autonomy. So we'll just pause there. I guess if they're trying to seek that state's autonomy, then that's obviously going to divide the country up, I would have thought. And if you're trying to weaken your opponent, that's the way to do it. Wouldn't that benefit America rather than China? Or am I not properly understanding this, Matt?
Well, you know, the author here seems to be new to the topic, because, you know, the U.S. has been involved here for decades. The forthcoming U.S., there's been diplomatic campaigns going on since the 70s. So, you know, it all comes down to, and I think that the government is ultimately going to win. You know, it's such a difficult place to fight. The Burmese constitution gives substantial autonomy to the regions, giving them any more. I mean, the fear is pure balkanization because, you know, they hate each other too. The military government has been the only thing to get, it was no different than Syria or Libya or anywhere else. The only thing to keep these groups from killing each other. It's only been CIA influence that's tried to unify them. Again, identical to the situation in Syria. De facto independence. I don't even know what that means. I don't know what the guerrillas in Kachin would do differently than Burma itself to develop the country. Guerrillas are not economists. They're not, you know, they don't know how to build states. They're fighters. But autonomy, well, that's kind of normal. It's within the Constitution, and the government has generally respected it. But having, you know, this balkanization, this mass slaughter, if the government were to lose control, I suppose that would definitely benefit the U.S., like it benefits the U.S. In Syria. And it removes a fairly large ally of China. But then again, the whole question is, would the Chinese tolerate that right on its border, especially given the strategic interests involved? You know, the U.S. has no business over there. No one's invited them. The Chinese, on the other hand, are always welcome by the government. And it really wouldn't matter if Aung San Suu Kyi were president. We've already learned that it's one thing to pretend to be a dissident and talk about democracy, you know, whatever she's told to say. But when she's actually in the driver's seat, it's a nasty job. So whoever's there, either the country goes out of existence or the military has to do whatever it can to maintain its control. And even now, more than drugs, more than oil, these rare earths, as Trump has said, are critical. And, you know, I predicted that it would flop in Ukraine. I don't believe any of them exist there. I think that was just an excuse. I talked about that at some length a few months ago. China, Burma, a very different story. That's the reason why the U.S. is involved. And this is even more strategic than the other stuff. I mean, everything there. The soil is rich. I mean, there's so much that could be going on there. And again, when the military is in charge, economic growth is substantial. But these wars hurt their own people, which is how you know that they're artificial. You know, they're destroying the infrastructure that was built either by China or Burma to assist them. And they destroy that. How is that? They're you know, and usually they're foreign led, like in the Rakhine State in the south. It was a Pakistani who led that rebellion. They hurt their own people here. So it suggests to me that these aren't, you know, this independence is nonsense. That's just an American-led fight to do damage to the Burmese to be able to steal these very important rare earth minerals and then somehow convince the Chinese to help them out with it when it comes to processing and everything else.
Well, getting back to the article here, the author says, in the order that they were mentioned, the military is on the back foot in Kachin, despite over 4 years of Chinese support. So it is unlikely that any new approach by China will reverse this trend. China's decades of engagement with Eastern Shan State's de facto independent United Hua State Army, including over rare earths, could serve as a precedent for something similar with the KIA. While seeking Kachin's autonomy in a Chinese-mediated political settlement would be the best-case scenario for Beijing. In any case, it is unimaginable that China will let the United States poach Kachin's rare earth reserves without making any attempt to preempt this power play, so the Sino-US rivalry in Burma is expected to intensify. Kachin is at the center of this struggle, which is nowadays driven by access to that region's rare earths, even though it used to be about CMEC, with Burma's political future, centralized, decentralized, devolved, or partitioned, only being a means to the aforementioned end. China has the edge over the United States due to geography, including the nearness of its rare earth processing facilities, its existing ties with both the junta and the KIA, and the allure that any new approach, possibly linked to CMEC, could have for facilitating a pragmatic deal between them. That said, the United States might at the very least try to provoke an armed Chinese intervention of some sort to embroil it in a quagmire, even if the odds of this scenario are low, all as part of their escalating new Cold War rivalry over Burma. And I think that's what you were saying there, Matt, was that the Americans might try to, it would actually benefit the Americans if there was military problems there, because it would weaken the country. And because China is the strongest ally of it, it's going to weaken China as well. But China hopes to strengthen its near monopoly over the world's military grade processed dysprosium, terbium and other rare earth elements by securing rebel held mines in Southeast Asia's war torn Burma, while boosting support for its coup-installed military dictatorship. China intelligently went in, and they sort of took a monopoly of the world's magnets, Trump told reporters on August 25th, while discussing tariffs. Nobody needed magnets until they convinced everybody 20 years ago, let's all do magnets. It'll take us probably a year to have them. We're heavy into the world of magnets now, only from a national security standpoint. And that is quite funny to actually read that Trump talking about these magnets here, but I'm guessing that they're not normal magnets. They're a very important part of modern technology. Matt, what are your comments on what we've just discussed there?
I don't think I've ever heard anyone refer to them all as magnets before. I can only assume he's referring to the most important rare earth minerals. These are all on the periodic table. And, you know, and he praises China here. But really, these are Chinese Burmese companies. It's going to be very difficult for the U.S. to do much. The only, you know, as you said before, I mean, the U.S. has is fairly weak in the area still, though. China has the edge in everything. Whether they want to provoke intervention, I'm not sure what that would mean. That, again, it's conceivable. Remember, the Kachin is right up on the Chinese border. It's the most northern state. There, I don't know if, how why would he assume that there would be a quagmire? I'm not sure of that at all. But because this is still ongoing, and given the media's absurdity when it came to inventing military defeats in, for Russia and stuff like that, you know, in 2021, 2022, the BBC were running pictures of the flood in Nigeria, claiming that this was after, you know, an attack by the Burmese army. Some kid was being harmed by child being harmed by a bunch of men. And it turned out to be a picture was from Cambodia, you know, 10 years earlier. So given Johnson's law, they're saying whatever they have to say. They're running pictures that aren't even relevant and saying, oh, this is what happened. This happened in Burma yesterday. I could go on and on about the fake pictures. Whether that's due to malice or ignorance, Johnson's law covers both.
Let me interject there. I don't think the Burmese army would have been doing very much in Nigeria there. I think maybe you misspoke the name of the word. Where is these fake pictures from?
No. The Western media, BBC in particular, ran a picture of the floods in Nigeria and said that this was because the Burmese blew up a dam during the Civil War. It was fake. It was a Nigerian picture. It had nothing to do with Myanmar or Burma. That's what I'm saying. They ran pictures from all over the world, you know, whatever they can get their hands on, claiming that this was what the Burmese were doing. They weren't. It was fake. It was designed to create a narrative from all over the world. You know, the media does this stuff all the time. And, you know, again, Johnson's law says, who knows? Actually, dams were one of the big things that the Burmese government was investing in heavily. But the picture was from Nigeria, not Burma, and from years ago. And they did the same thing for Cambodia. Wherever they can get a nasty picture, they say this is what the Burmese army has done. So the point I'm trying to make is that as far as Western media goes, you can't trust a damn thing they say. As of right now, the basic media idea and the narrative is identical no matter where you go. Burmese army is losing. They control 30% of their territory, something like that. And I frankly don't believe it's true. There are, I do believe there are Chinese private military corporations working there, possibly Russian ones. The Burmese-Russian security arrangement, you know, this is an extremely well-armed, well-trained, battle-hardened army. The media is also talking about mass desertion. Well, they just put out another 20,000 trained men from the draft. So I don't know where this desertion is taking place. You know, they're creating this chaos in the capital that doesn't exist. They're saying whatever they have to say, knowing that no one really knows anything. They could say whatever the heck they want. And that's really what I meant by all of that. So in other words, you cannot trust what the Western media says about this. They don't know anything.
I was just going to say, there's a lot of things you can't trust the Western media about. I mean, just look at this issue at the moment with the BBC making a fake speech of Donald Trump up out of two or three of his other speeches. And then you've got how ludicrous is this, Matt? I know this is a different subject, but in the Houses of Parliament, they were discussing this and the MPs were coming forwards and saying, in the world of today where there's so much fake news about, it's so important that we have a trusted organisation like the BBC. It just didn't get through to them. They were the ones creating the fake news. The BBC were the ones creating it by doctoring this Trump speech. So we see, basically what we're seeing here is they will do this in Burma, but they'll do it to Donald Trump's speech, the president's speech, they're going to do it to anyone. aren't they? I don't know if you want to add, add more to that.
Especially, no, precisely. You're absolutely right. They don't get it. They were doing this, you know, with the ISIS nonsense, all those fake pictures. So they're doing a very similar thing to the Ukraine thing. Russia's losing, desertion, all this, and it didn't exist. They're just transferring the exact same verbiage here. And they simply don't know. The U.S. has been at war with China over the Belt and Road for a very long time. The CMEC, the Chinese-Myanmar Economic Corridor, is already moving a lot of goods. It's already is potentially far even wealthier, and this is just the beginning. I don't think the Chinese are going to allow that to be just shut down. I think that's one of the things that the authors have been hinting at here. I don't think it would be a quagmire at all. Although, you know, Kachin is a difficult place to fight given how mountainous it is. But if the Chinese can fight the Indians and the Himalayas, you know, I'm not too worried about it. Trump has kind of been nice to the, we'll see here in a little bit, has been nice to the Burmese military, not because, you know, the government likes them, because I don't think they have much of a choice. And the 2021 coup, I covered this in great detail. They have on there in English, they have on, see, I don't know anything about Burmese language, so I can't, unlike the Russian and Ukrainian, I can't read the originals, but they have it in English. All of the fraud and the nonsense that took place in their elections. And I think Western states were involved in providing some of the computers and everything else that they used. So even that's never to be trusted. I think they had every reason to take over. I also think that the army is popular, has always been popular. There's a section, the New Light of Myanmar, which is a newspaper that I read, which is more balanced, generally pro-government. It has fact-check section. And the entire thing is essentially debunking all the media reports of bombing of civilians, killing civilians for no reason, you know, stuff like this, and giving the actual explanation. But what American Englishman, who knows any better? Johnson's Law came from here. And but the fight is still ongoing. The battle is still ongoing. I strongly doubt that there's been any victory of the revolutionary armies anywhere. And don't forget, it's not, you know, drugs are still relevant, especially in the Shan state. It's kind of like FARC in Colombia, you know, communist guerrilla funded by cocaine. It's very similar there. But weapons are coming from somewhere. You know, it's but they're pretty much whatever they can get their hands on. There have been local villages fighting these armies in favor of the government. Government's not there. People are showing up to conscription all over they've always had conscription all over the country. So again, this notion that the place is out of control, I strongly doubt. This is probably the most intense the Civil War has been in a long time. But this is all the Burmese army does, is plan for this thing. This is all they do. You know, and they have an air force, which is fairly advanced, you know, so, you know, what you're talking about with the media stuff, applying it to a place that no one knows anything about. I've been studying it now for 25 years for some reason. It's going to be 10 times worse. So I believe nobody, but Trump, you know, despite Trump calling it magnets and everything else, I think he's taking a fairly balanced approach to the whole thing, at least as of right now.
Well, that's good to know anyway. Getting back to the article, the U.S. Embassy in Burma's Charge d'Affaires, Susan Stevenson, visited northern Kachin State's capital, Myit Kyina, between August 11th and 13th, but reportedly did not meet the Kachin Independence Army insurgents who control the mountainous state's rare earth mines. Stevenson did not engage with KIA officials or members of the military regime during her visit, the embassy's spokesperson reportedly said. The visit was part of Stevenson's ongoing familiarization travel to better understand local socio-economic conditions throughout the country, The spokesperson said, according to the Irrawaddy, an independent Burma news publication, the US is locked out of the raw supplies of Burma's mines that China now dominates, processing 90% of the world's rare earth elements. Burma is now the single largest source of heavy rare earth elements globally, said the London-based environmental watchdog Global Witness. The facile BBC wrote, the US has one operational rare earths mine, but it does not have the capacity to separate heavy rare earths and has to send its ore to China for processing. There used to be US companies that manufactured rare earth magnets. Until the 1980s, the United States was in fact the largest producer of rare earths. But these companies exited the market as China began to dominate in terms of scale and cost. But, I mean, does America actually have the mines there in America, though? I mean, China's got the mines right there on its doorstep, haven't they, with Burma, and they can process them. Whereas, as far as I'm aware, America doesn't have rare earth mines. That's why it was saying that it needed to get these rare earths from Ukraine. So it's always going to be China that dominates in this, I would have thought, because the resources are so much closer to them. Your thoughts, Matt?
Yeah, and there's so many people who know the language. I it's funny, you know, this woman went to, she said she didn't engage with KIA officials or members of the military. So who did she talk to? I don't know who she spoke to. It was media, probably NGOs organized the entire thing, human rights, whoever it is. Now, the problem with rare earth mining is probably impossible in the U.S. because of its environmental cost. The environmental groups would stop it at every turn. It's like fracking. It takes a lot of resources. It can be dangerous. And that would be the problem for the U.S., one of the reasons that it was shut down in the U.S. Now, there's a whole bunch of these. I don't know which ones were found in the United States. China has them all. As I said before, the Ukrainian thing was this BS. I know they don't have it there, or they do if they're nominal amounts. That was just a label. But, you know, how can you have any kind of war with China when you're totally dependent on them for everything? I mean, these are military applications, you know, fighter jets and radar systems and missile systems all require processed various rare earth elements in order to work. You know, how can you possibly be at war with China? The Ukraine thing was a flop. Maybe someone said there was going to be there, but it wasn't in Ukraine. They're desperate to find other sources. I think there's some a little bit in Latin America, but not like in China. And China has the expertise. So the U.S. ends up being dependent on China for even more things than before. I don't know which rare earth the U.S. was dominant, but there's no way the environmental groups are ever going to permit that kind of mining in the U.S. Or if they do, it would be a really nasty fight and it would be very expensive. But I don't think that's possible right now. It's just another aspect of globalization. That's the story. I don't, you know, there's so many of these rare earths. I don't know, you know, China has every single one. Other individual ones can be found in other places, but it's just so much easier in China. Plus they have the capacity to do it. They also know the environmental elements to it. They had a lot of problems in Burma in that regard, though. And that's a legitimate complaint against the government. But they made a lot of money. The local people made a lot of money off this stuff. These investments, where do you think the mining technology came from? It came from Burma, it came from China. So who are these people fighting against? I don't believe they control, the rebels control all of these mines. What are they, mining experts all of a sudden? They require inputs from both countries. I think the U.S. media just believes their propaganda itself coming from the U.S., whether it be the CIA or other elements of the regime. So the BBC, you know, I'm not sure how they know anything. I don't even know what the Stevenson. If she knows anything, I don't know who she was talking to, if not the rebels, if not the government. The Irrawaddy is pretty good. I've read them before. It's English language. So, you know, the U.S., again, is totally dependent and has to be really, really nice to the Chinese about it.
It has to be NGOs that she was visiting. I'm surprised the author didn't point that out as well. And talking to NGOs being paid to subvert the country with ideas of democracy. That's the playbook, isn't it? They always use the NGOs for these things. There's a really good interview with the president of Belarus talking about NGOs to the BBC that I recommend people watch. Lukashenko's interview with the BBC about NGOs. Getting back to the article here, Beijing expects Chinese money, political persuasion, and Burma's aerial bombardments in the mountainous north and east will eventually pacify insurgents where rare earth elements are being mined and further secure their extraction. During the past several years, alienation between Washington and Naypyidaw, Burma's capital, enabled Beijing and Moscow to increase their support for Burma by providing weapons, investments, and diplomatic backing in international forums. Chinese energy firms now supply solar, wind, hydropower, and gas to Burma to ease its expensive fuel costs. China was helping to extract most of Burma's rare earths for several years, but Beijing's grip slipped in 2024 when insurgents seized some of the mines. Most of the HREE, as HREE, heavy rare earth elements from Burma, originate from Kachin State on the border with China. China controls, refines, produces and stockpiles nearly 90% of the world's rare earth supply and has long sourced a significant share of its raw materials from Burma's northern border regions. The BBC are also quoted as saying. Nan Nguyen said in a report titled Burma's Rare Earths Cries Behind Critical Minerals, satellite imagery shows at least 370 mining sites in Kachin, mainly in Chipwi and Mamuauk townships. These sites contain nearly 3,000 in-situ leaching ponds for mineral extraction. According to our data, Burma's rare earth exports to China exceeded $3.6 billion in the past 4 years. That is over five times higher than the same period before the 2021 coup. Do you want to make a comment on that, Matt? That's rather a lot.
Well, it is very significant. Satellite imagery isn't self-interpreting. Plus, you don't need satellite imagery. The government, you know, this is all public knowledge. I don't know why they needed a satellite for this. And even the amounts are fairly, you know, well known. Aerial bombardment, the rebels are at a disadvantage for many reasons. One of which, of course, they don't have an air force and they don't have a navy. Their control over mines, I don't think exists. I just think that China, you know, given the nature of the economy, China's economic growth, China's, military growth, that these mines have to be producing more, hence the increase. If a rebel group were to take over a mine, what the heck would they do? That would be like me and you taking over a mine. We don't know anything. They need the state in this regard. And they even go on to talk about this victory that the insurgents have. There is no victory. That's media manipulation. The government will win, finally. It will cost a fortune. It will destroy much of the economy. They're going to have to rebuild again. And the only people who are going to lose are the local populations, the Burmese people, the ethnic minorities. As always, they're the only ones who lose.
But America might get some cheap minerals out of it, might get some cheap rare earths out of it. Don't know what you're concerned about, Matt. What does it matter if some villagers and farmers lose their livelihoods and the country's drained of all its resources? You know, we need to have our satellite systems and our technology over here in the first world. I mean, that's the sad part of this. You know, we do actually need these materials in order to function in the modern world. And yet the way of getting them, it destroys the natural landscape, it impoverishes the people there, but it's needed to function in the Western world. And it's going to play a very important part of geopolitics, I think, over the next 10 years, especially as we need more and more power and more computer technology to fund this new AI revolution, which is going to need so much energy that they're just having to give up on this idea that climate change is being caused by too much carbon and we can't have power stations. We need the power stations now for the AI, don't we? And this is all a part of it. It's there's always going to be someone somewhere that loses out. So the more we can find out about that, then the more we can try and alleviate things so that they don't lose out quite so much anyway. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.